Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, I guess it's time to hoop it up. I'm confused. I was sitting here ready to just bask in the Denver Nuggets glory, the parade, Jokic being the most relatable person I've known, Bruce Brown shirtless, Coach Michael Malone wildin'.
We had Bluffs. Also shortlist.
But Aaron Gordon was feeling some things. We got KCP doing Stone Cold. The season's over. We got Bluff season going on where, hey, everyone wants to get a draft pick, but some people don't want a draft pick. And, hey, these superstars are available, but maybe they're not. And we got hit with a sledgehammer. So it's time to news it up.
It's time to news it up indeed. So I peel the curtain back very quickly before we dig into, I guess, what's turning into the meat of the podcast at this point, as the Google Doc that I typed the topics in just continues to extend. Anyway, so it's 12:07 Eastern right now, a little afternoon. We were scheduled to record at 11 a.m. And because we got late news in, plus discussing, okay, how do we want to talk about this? What could we actually say on the podcast? You know, if you want freer thoughts, and come join us for the Dunker Spot watch party. So we get questions, we give some answers. But anyway, like, okay, how do we want to talk about this? What can we say about this? Et cetera, et cetera. And that turned into like an hour long pre-pod meeting of sorts. And so now here we are, getting ready to talk through Michael Jordan selling his share of the Hornets and Mike Dunleavy Jr. stepping up. And there was a suscension from some guy. Ja Morant, 25 games. He's just not going to be there for the beginning of the season. There's a lot to suss through on the NBA side from the news portion. And that's before getting into, I have Bradley Beal thoughts. I'll just tease that up top. I have Bradley Beal thoughts. The conversation immediately annoyed me once the news came out. But anyway, we will start with Ja Morant, suspended for the first 25 games of the season. We'll also have conditions for his return. Part of the statement reads, Ja Morant's decision, this is from Adam Silver, Ja Morant's decision to once again wield a firearm on social media is alarming and disconcerting, given his similar conduct in March, for which he was already suspended 8 games. The potential for
Hold on. That sentence alone should tell you exactly, what time Adam Silver was on. Decision to once again.
You got once again and already in the same sentence.
And given his similar conduct. Nah, continue.
It's kind of tough. The potential for other young people to emulate Ja's conduct is particularly concerning. Under these circumstances, we believe a suspension of 25 games is appropriate and makes clear that engaging in reckless and irresponsible behavior with guns will not be tolerated. And then towards the end of Adam Silver's statement, for Ja, basketball needs to take a backseat at this time. Prior to his return to play, he will be required to formulate and fulfill a program with the league that directly addresses the circumstances that led him to repeat this destructive behavior. The wording was strong.
Very. I mean, literally, in the headline, with conditions for reinstatement, towards the bottom, basketball needs to take a backseat at this time. He will be required to formulate and fulfill a program, the league that directly addresses the circumstances that led him to repeat this destructive behavior. Look, I don't know who has gotten in trouble for any sort of thing in life. When they tell you to come up with your own plan on top of the punishment, buddy, you in trouble. The league clearly was upset. The league has never liked repeat offenders. They don't like dealing with the same thing multiple times. For me, when it comes to Ja, do whatever you have to do to go get right. Whatever it is. But that's the number one thing for me. Take this moment, turn whatever you need to turn around, and move forward. But it's very clear the league has had enough. And I'm not into like comparing suspensions. I understand, but I beyond my capacity. This is a clear statement. A, you can't do this. We're not doing this. You got to get better. And I hope he takes that. That's like from a human aspect. I hope that he takes this opportunity and makes the most out of it.
Yeah. And I guess to Jaws, however much you want to assign credit, that is very much up to the reader slash listener. Like Jaws did release a statement. Saying he had time to reflect. He apologized to just about anyone you could think of. Apologized to the league, the Grizzlies, his teammates, the city of Memphis, Adam Silver, the owner, the GM, to the kids that look up to him, to his sponsors, to all his fans. He laid it out in his statement. Now, again, how much you want to believe is up to you. And ultimately, whether you believe him or not, it is still up to him to prove his words true with his actions moving forward. And so I kind of echo Steve said, I do echo Steve's sentiments. He just has to behave in a better manner. He just has to clean up whatever it is. I don't know if it's just decision-making. I don't know if it's anything deeper than that. I don't know him personally, so I'm not going to speculate. But there has to be better choices being made. And I think that's what Adam Silver laid out in his statement. And that's why he specifically said, like, hey, we don't want kids emulating what they're seeing from him right now. And that felt like as much of a gut punch as the, repeated offenses and all that good stuff. Because Ja isn't just really good at basketball. You've seen all the commercials that he's in. And then you just look at the style of play, like he very much has face of the league potential. That is not me getting into, hey, is Ja going to be a top three player in the NBA? Whatever, whatever. People gravitate to Ja Morant. They gravitate to the way that he carries himself on and off the floor. And the off the floor portion is where I think Adam Silver's like, hey, you need to clean this up. Because we don't want any kind of conflicting images here. And so I just hope for Ja's sake, first and foremost, like there's so much potential here. And just for him as a person, like, just make better choices so you can live the most full life that you can. And to really maximize the opportunity that you have in the league. Because clearly, just from an on-court perspective, you're very much good enough for it. You're one of the best players in the league right now. But just for quality of life purposes, like, get all of that together. And I hope he does. Because I don't want to see any other incidents from him. I know the league doesn't. I know the Grizzlies don't.
I would like for this to be done.
Yeah.
For me, I can't shake the human aspect of it. I would just like for him to understand what's happening. Like, this needs to be the moment that the light bulb turns on. And so that you can improve through this. I mean, we're all humans. We all make mistakes, different scales, different stages. But the important thing is learning and understanding and improving yourself and those around you. Very hard to do that if you are stuck or if you are making the same mistakes. So I want to see the actions. And it's very clear, based on that statement, to what you said, no, there needs to be actions this time. Mm-hmm. The words were great last time. Fantastic. You did the same stuff. It's not just that you're suspended. We need to see that you have done something different before you can come back and play. That's the part that sticks with me. Like, hey, cool. Sounds great. Sounded great last time. Are you actually ready to do this?
There are stakes. It's going to be up to Job from here. He has to nail it, and I hope he does, and I know many people do as well. Moving on to Michael Jordan, which is a tremendous transition for me. But anyway, moving on to Michael Jordan, who has agreed to sell his stake of the Hornets. A valuation of $3 billion. That's going to end a 13-year run as the majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets. Sold to a group led by Glade Plotkin and Rich Schnall. J. Cole and Eric Church, also part of the group that is purchasing this team. So that's a cool note. But were you surprised that we got this news before the draft?
A little bit. We had heard whispers about it. Really, the most surprising thing to me was the $3 billion dollar valuation for the Charlotte Hornets, which tells you
that the league's in a good place.
The league is big business right now. We've seen some pretty astronomical numbers discussed over the last, what, 3-4 teams that we've seen this happen with, you kind of understand Michael Jordan maybe sitting at a draft workout being like, you know what? That ain't so bad. What did he pay? $275 million?
Yeah, that's a profit. Yeah, that'll get all the jeans I want. It's crazy.
All right.
But no, so we will see. I guess for me, beyond just the dollar figure, I just wonder, what does this mean for the Charlotte draft? Because it was noted, I think it was Adrian Wojnarowski to make the initial report. It was noted that Jordan MJ is going to continue to oversee basketball operations through the draft and the start of free agency. So with all the whispers of, hey, does Charlotte want to stay at 2? Who do they want at 2? Teams trying to move up, get that spot. How does the ownership change affect that, if at all? And the start of free agency wording is interesting to me. I'm just like, okay, does this mean he's just done July 1st? Does this mean like July 4th, like throughout that weekend? Like, what exactly does that entail? And from there, like, does Charlotte have any signings, or I guess re-signings in a certain case in mind here that MJ wants to oversee? Like, that's also what I'm keeping an eye on. But other than that, like, I'm just interested in see what Charlotte's direction is moving forward.
Nah, I think I definitely get the end of the draft for sure. Like, it'd be very hard to just pivot at the last moment, literally. If Charlotte had a vision and they had a vision, you just got to execute it at this point. The start of free agency does intrigue me because, A, what does that mean? And, B, who are you going after? But that makes more sense. Like, you don't just want to throw people in ice cold to a very important stretch. So, you know, kind of a passing of the torch there.
Got you. I'd say, okay, just quickly, Mike Dunleavy Jr. promoted to GM, general manager of the Warriors. We talked a little bit about the Bob Myers situation, 2 weeks ago at this point. There are rumblings that he might leave, and then later that week found out he was actually stepping down. And so that's where that is going. We did get some Team USA news for the FIBA World Cup this summer. 10 of the 12 spots have been filled to this point. Your guards right now, or lead guards rather, Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton. On the wings, we have Anthony Edwards, Mikal Bridges, Brandon Ingram, Cam Johnson, and Austin Reeves. And for your bigs, Jaren Jackson Jr., Walker Kessler, and Bobby Portis.
Very quickly, I want to ask once again, are you building this team?
I can't say that I am, no.
Okay, is this a 2K rebuild?
It could be in certain respects, I suppose. But no, I feel like it's a very talented team. I was looking at the rosters, like, okay, they got 2 more spots. I wonder what type of player they're going to prioritize to field the 2. Like, I would imagine they would want another, like, lead guard type. Like, obviously, Anthony Edwards can run some offense for you. Like, you can run some stuff through Brandon Ingram. But, like, Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton seem to be the true, like, point guards on the roster. So I wonder if they want a third.
I would imagine, like, either another guard, another shooter, or someone who's just there to play defense. Like, I would probably tap more into the quote unquote specialist role with the last 2 spots. Like, I wouldn't be surprised by that. Cause I like the depth. I like the youth. I like the versatility. I am intrigued to see what this looks like. How does this defense come together? On paper, you got a lot of people who give the effort and are dogs and compete. You've got rim protection. How switchable are you? What's your versatility there? And then offensively, what's the ball movement look like? Like, I think a lot of these people can go ahead and get buckets. And I believe with the movement, how are they going to create for each other? What's the opening point for them? Like, how do they keep pressure on teams? I'm just intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what this looks like more than anything else.
I got you. And I also wonder just how much this playoff run maybe affected the rosters with teams going deeper, like what we have seen. Like, if Boston loses in round 1 or round 2, do we see Jason Tatum on this roster, for example? I guess depending on who Bam wants to represent, like, do we see him on this roster if the Heat don't make the finals run? Would that be interesting to me? To your point about the defense, as I look at the roster, like, they do have good defenders on the roster. It doesn't seem like they have, like, a big wing defender, per se. So if they do go specialist, like, I would want someone that could just specifically fill that role. Even if that's like a smaller name or something, like, I guess could do some research on the fly. Like, would Jared Vanderbilt be a guy? Like, okay, if we have to deal with a stocky wing somewhere, he feels like someone that you don't require him to play like 28 minutes, but he could defend this dude for a few, can help with your rebounding, help with your defense overall. Like, that would fit the specialist void for me.
I'm trying to see, like, can they get like a Derek White, Marcus Smart type adjacent player? Right, this is what you do. Like, you can do other things as well, but we need you to do this. Like, that's where I'm intrigued.
Yeah, makes sense. While we're on Team USA adjacent players, Bradley Beal and the Washington Wizards are expected to work together to find a trade partner if the team decides to rebuild.
Think about that sentence. they're gonna work together if they make that decision. And the thing is, they have to work together because Bradley Beal has a no trade clause.
Yes, like, thank you for telling us what we knew twice already. What was implicit in Bradley Beal getting the no trade clause to begin with. Which, man, Washington. Man. Like, sometimes we talk about, like, trades or signings or decisions and, like, with the benefit of hindsight, like, oh, we should have paid a little bit more attention to this. Or, man, if I would have known this thing would have broke this way, they shouldn't have done this. It felt like off-rip when Bradley Beal got the extension, which I'll quickly stop and say, he deserves his money. Get paid. I'm very much focusing on the Washington Wizards side of this for right now. The second that contract was handed out, Supermax plus the no trade clause, I think we talked about it on the pod when it came out. Like, hey, man, I don't know if that's what you should do. I think the team building is going to become a lot more difficult, and you're already not in the tier that you want to be in as a team. It's going to become difficult. And even if you do want to eventually move him, now that you're given the no trade clause, you're not getting the young player plus four first unprotected plus salary filler that could be useful in the short term. You're not getting any of that if you do decide to move him. And so now that we have gotten to this point to where it may make sense for both parties to, okay, let's trade Beal. Let's fully rebuild this time instead of trying to build from the middle, which is what the Wizards have been trying to do since basically the Wall era, it feels like. Now it's even more difficult to do that. And so, like, you didn't even need the benefit of hindsight to see, like, this is probably where it's going. That's not ideal. With that said, I have found myself frustrated with the way that Bradley Beal has been talked about as a basketball player. I think it's fair to note, like, we haven't seen 70-game Bradley Beal in a very long time. We're rarely seeing 60, 65-game Bradley Beal over the last recent stretch. And you combine that with the salary figures. That would explain, one, why he's available right now, and two, while he's not going to warrant a superstar package because of those facts. But, like, this is still someone that can score on all three levels, really good driver, can make plays out of ball screens, can very much be your number three or number two on a really good team. Like, I think the Wizards experiment has shown, okay, Bradley Beal can't be your best player if you are trying to contend for a title. Not everyone is, and that's fine. But his skill set dovetails nicely with just about every team at the top right now. And so it felt like the conversation shifted too much towards the money portion, even beyond the injury part. It shifted too much to the money portion where it's like, okay, we still need to have a fundamental understanding of how good at basketball this dude is. Like, there is a reason why Boston's been linked, or I guess they haven't been super linked at this point, but Boston was mentioned. Miami has very much been linked. We got the Sacramento noise. Like, there's a reason good teams want this dude. And the benefit of a team like Miami getting Bradley Beal is like, okay, we don't need him to be the best player on the team. This is his ideal context. The contract is not going to change. That just is what it is. But Bradley Beal can absolutely slot in and play off of Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler. He could absolutely, if Boston changes course, based on the reporting, he could slot in next to Jason Tatum and or Jaylen Brown. Let's not forget how good Bradley Beal is in all of this. let's not tell falsehoods about what type of player he is. He may not be a number one, but he's a darn good number two, in my opinion. That ends my rant. My apologies.
Nah, don't apologize. I think it's interesting. And for me, I always pause because we do this cycle all the time where a player is good. We know a player is good. A player plays to a point where he gets paid a certain amount of money. And now the conversation shifts from the player to the contract, which I understand. Like, I don't want to take that away from people, but I'm not going to put Bradley Beal in a box just because he got paid what he had earned. I don't think that's fair to the human being. Now, I understand it is tricky, especially with the new CBA that I'm learning to understand. Roster building can get very tricky with these high salaries. And so I do think there is a context for that. But to act like he can't play just because he makes a certain amount of money, I don't love that.
Yeah, I think Bradley Beal's...
Go ahead.
Just very quickly, like, that's the part that I was, like, railing about on Twitter. Like, I don't, the contract's the contract, and I agree with how destructive that contract can be in the wrong context. It just, Bradley Beal ain't that good. It's like, okay, we need more context than that. Because he's not a number one, sure. But, like, he can drive, he can pull up, he can make passing reads. Depending on what his engagement level is defensively and what scheme he's in defensively, I think he could be manageable, especially if he's not tasked with carrying an offense. And that's where I'm just like, okay, let's focus in on who Bradley Beal as a player is right now. Like, there's a reason why it's maybe like a 6 or 7 team race for Bradley Beal instead of 28. It's because of the contract. It's because of the injuries. That context should be factored in. We should be able to talk about what his actual skill set is, though. And, like, some of the stuff that I was seeing, again, very anecdotal, just my timeline. It can't be nonsense. That's fine. Is like, oh, y'all don't know what Bradley Beal does. You see Bradley Beal, contract figure, basketball reference. These are how many games the Wizards have won. He's bad. And it's like, that's could not be further from the truth.
I mean, what, he averaged 20 plus on 50% shooting? That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So I was going back as you were speaking. I looked back at the notes from when we did the pod, when Bradley Beal actually signed that deal. And for me, I looked at my notes and said, well, I think the Wizards wanted to keep him happy. Beal was tired with the rumors, and that's off the table, and anything that's on the table has to go through him. And here we are now. In the exact same scenario. And I'm curious to see the market for Bradley Beal. Like, it's hard to... The Wizards, the whole drafting portion of this program for them has really just changed the math on how this works. But I think teams are always looking to win and improve. And we're coming off a year where we saw teams spend capital to get DeJounte Murray, to get Rudy Gobert. It didn't really go as planned for those teams. So how much are teams going to be willing to give up to get Bradley Beal, especially with the new CBA? Like, it feels like a window scenario to me. Yeah. Like a real win now type deal, like right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like the, you know, when the Bulls got Vucevic, and then that opened up the ability to get DeMar. It doesn't feel like a, hey, let's give up X, Y, and Z to add this talented piece and then go for it.
Yeah.
Because I think those teams would basically end up Wizards adjacent, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
To where, okay, we've got Bradley Beal, but what can we add? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's where it gets tricky and gets tough. So it's like, okay, there's only a handful of teams I could see this with right now. Not that he wouldn't fit talent-wise, but I can only see so many teams saying, you know what, this is where we got to push our chips to.
Yeah. And I think just to bounce off that point, that's where you see some of the rumblings that Chicago is at least listening to stuff on Zach LaVine. And I think that's where teams, like you mentioned, like the Chicago example, I think that's where teams would look like, okay, if we're going to push our chips in for someone that we can still try to add another piece to, like maybe it's LaVine versus Beal, just by virtue of, I think LaVine is a little bit younger, but also just the difference in the contracts. Like, maybe we could do that. And again, this is nothing to say of how willing Chicago is to do this. It's just, hey, we'll pick up the phone. So nothing to dig too deep in right now, but that example is there. But I think it was early stuff on Boston, then immediate reporting, like Boston ain't in it. We don't want. So fine. Miami's been linked. Milwaukee, interesting team that's been linked.
Can I be respectfully messy for a second?
Go ahead.
How much of that was we just don't want to make Jaylen Brown mad or any more mad than he may be? The last thing we need is Bradley Beal could be linked back to Jason Tatum.
You know they're from, you know they're friends. They're from the same area.
No. We just had a whole KD summer. No. We want Jaylen Brown to come back.
And just to bounce off of that, not just the KD summer, like when Kawhi was available, when Paul George was available, when Jimmy Butler was available. Saw it. Anthony Davis for a little bit, and then I think Anthony Davis' dad was like, nah. But yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, Miami, Milwaukee, like the no from Boston. Sacramento is interesting to me. How do you feel about the Sacramento rumbling?
Well, I have five teams on my list.
Okay.
That makes sense to me.
Okay.
The Sacramento makes the most sense to me from an on-course perspective.
Hmm.
Like, I hear that it would hurt them in the future, but I think if you have that system, you have Sabonis, you have Fox, you have Beal, that's a lot to deal with. Now, I will give the caveat. I do not know how they would get Bradley Beal based on the numbers, so don't yell at me. But if you're telling me Bradley Beal is able to operate in the system with movement, with handoffs, he can run pick and roll, he could have the second unit potentially. Now you have to deal with what the Kings do offensively and also Sabonis in the post and also De'Aaron Fox and also Bradley Beal. Well, that's a pretty good combination. And this is a team that it's not necessarily win now, but it's, well, we probably need to try and accelerate this if we can. So I think it's a right price deal where I'd be like, yes, that makes sense. But on court, that's one of the top fits for me.
Okay. Would that just be like a souped up version of like the mid-2010s Wizards?
I don't like what you did right there.
I'm just asking. So you like Fox is fast. You know, John Wall was also fast. And then.
Not the new Wall Beal. Nah, because they got some bonus. He's not a difference maker. I'll go maybe.
Some Gortat slander. That's tough. But I just wanted to just sprinkle that in there. I'm intrigued. I think I'm really intrigued by the Milwaukee one. Cause I'm just like, okay, what direction do you go in to make this work? Cause I feel like there are only two paths to do that. It's like, hey, Chris Middleton's going to opt in and then we're sending him to a third team. And then Washington's getting stuff. But like, I don't know if Milwaukee has enough capital beyond that to make that work. Or, hey, here's Jrue Holiday, in which, one, I don't know if the Wizards would want Jrue. It may just still be a similar Jrue to a third team. Here's some young stuff going to Washington. And it's like,
I'm not going to lie. I don't love Milwaukee.
You don't love Milwaukee? Okay. Mm-mm. Like, I'm intrigued because Giannis with a guard that I really trust running ball screens is, like, interesting to me and, like, an actual three-level scorer. I get it. And if you feel like, especially if you're planning on bringing Brooke Lopez back, I would hope that they do. If your foundation is, okay, we know the defense is going to be good. We got Giannis and Brooke. What's been killing us in the postseason, or what's been hurting us in the postseason, even in the year that we won, was what is this half-court offense going to look like? And if it switches from Jrue or Chris, you are our top option to operate with Giannis, to Bradley Beal, that can move a needle for me. They will still have to fill out the rest of the roster, of course. But, like, that would move a needle for me conceptually.
The second part is where I'm concerned. There's a team that needs depth. It's the Milwaukee Bucks.
Mm.
And I fear that you make that move for Bradley Beal, it still don't work. And Giannis is like, you know what, man? It's been real. It's been fun. But it ain't been real fun.
Wow. There was that one year. That's crazy. All right.
So the Heat were the number one for me.
Same.
Mainly and because if you can do Tyler Hero plus X, I get it.
And depending on what the motivations are, like, it may not take Hero. Mm. It may be, here's Kyle Lowry's expiring, plus something else you might like, plus here are two or three picks that we can trade. And if Beal says, hey, in which I think there was some reporting that Beal has not laid out a I want to go to this team only bit. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that he won't, but he hasn't to this point. But if it does get to that point, it's Miami, and they've built Miami's been a link for 2-3 years at this point. Like, Miami could get there and then potentially, like, parlay Tyler Hero into more depth. So, like, that makes the most sense for me. I think Miami build. Like, it feels like the writing's been on the wall there for a minute.
Hey, Miami's been trying to land another hashtag whale, so I would totally get it. For me, if I'm Washington, hey, Tyler Hero, come here, or hey, RJ Barrett, come here. Give me something bad that I could potentially turn into something else.
I feel that. And that's where the Knicks one really gets interesting as well. Another team that's been linked to the Bradley Beal sweepstakes. Because, like, they have salaries they could toss out there. They also just have all of the picks that they didn't send for Donovan Mitchell. Now, I don't know. They're certainly not sending the same volume that was reported in the Mitchell deal for, again, health contract, age difference between Beal and Mitchell. But the Knicks can put something together. I just wonder if that's the path that they want to go down. Or if they feel they need to go down that path yet. If they passed on Mitchell, like, it'd be weird to kind of cash in the chips on Beal. But impossible, but yeah.
Makes sense. I wouldn't even say I would do it if I was New York, but I can understand if they shot their shot. But like, if I'm Washington, I don't love just trading him to get Tobias Harris or Chris Middleton or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, understand.
Like, you're probably not going to get max value from Bradley Beal that you could have gotten. But can you do something that's going to help you down the line, or are you just doing this to do this?
Yeah. Because I don't, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, circling back, this was going to be the problem with the contract doled out. If you ever hit this point, it's just going to become a lot more difficult. And so here we are, and we will see how that plays out. The funny part is if we get all the way here and it feels like it's actually happening, it's just, you know, Wizards magic to open the season on October 23rd and starting at shooting guard for Washington from Florida, Bradley Beal. It's like, well, that was fun again.
And then we'll have another year of me saying, hey, look out for the Wizards.
They've started the season 8-4. Hold on.
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's shift to the W while I'm in the mood to yell at folks. We got the first returns for All-Star voting. Dropped earlier this week. I would imagine we get the second return early next week, so we'll keep an eye on those. But based on that voting result, the starters would be in the backcourt: Jackie Young from the Las Vegas Aces, Jewel Lloyd from the Seattle Storm, Arike Ogunbowale from the Dallas Wings, Kelsey Plum also from the Las Vegas Aces, and in your front court, Asia Wilson as from the Aces, Brianna Stewart from the Liberty, Brittany Griner from the Mercury, rookie Aaliyah Boston from the Indiana Fever, Satu Sabali, also from the Wings, and Elena Deladon would be the starters as of now. I think as we record on this Friday, I think today is like a double vote day, or the votes count double. The 2-for-1. So get those in if you'd like. Steve, your early reaction to what the starters would be right now. This is 4 backcourt, 6 front court.
Now, what's interesting is, do we get a second return? Because voting ends on the 21st. Which, as of recording, is in 5 days. So it's going to be very interesting. Also, W, I would love for you to separate the front court and the guards just for my brain's purposes.
Yeah, putting them all together on one list. Like, you should have a total list, but then also have them split up.
So I get the vision, which I was doing, but my brain, it's too much back and forth. I'm going to be honest. The front court surprised me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, fan vote is not everything, but it does reshape things a lot. Like, I had my 5 locked in. And so, reevaluating it, Asia, Stewie, and Brittany Griner, locks. I had NECA and EDD as well as my locks. And I was going, do I go Satu or Alyssa Thomas? Well, Aaliyah Boston and Satu changes that to where it's, is it EDD or NECA? Or Alyssa Thomas? That's where it's like, whoa. So salute to Satu for getting the recognition for the years she's had. I guess I probably should have anticipated Aaliyah Boston getting that kind of support. And she's had a really good year as well. So not surprising from a talent perspective, but more, I didn't see that coming. Where were you at with the front court?
Man, I don't know what Alyssa Thomas has to do. I just don't know what she has to do. Because we had a similar conversation about this last year when she was tremendous. Interior scoring, rebounding, playmaking, all-world defense. This year, it's still June 16th right now. We still have a lot more season to go. She is the heavy front runner for Defensive Player of the Year for me right now with what she's done this year. Filling the stat sheet, Connecticut's second best team in the league right now. Like, she should be like top three MVP candidate this year. And for her to not even be in the top 10 in total votes, and for her to not only not be in the top six for front court and make this list, but like not, she ain't top eight. It's just like, what has to happen to get her more recognition? I just can't get there. She's been too good to not be a starter. And, you know, as you noted, like, the fans aren't all of it. Fans, they had 50% of the vote, players and media 25% apiece. So regardless, you know, depending on where the fan vote ends, we'll see what happens there. Like, we may still get her in as a starter, but that's wild to look at. It's just wild to look at.
Are you ready for an answer that you're not going to enjoy?
Probably.
I think she's just a victim of the split. If it's split to this degree, where EDD and NECA are going head-to-head, plus Aaliyah Boston getting votes, plus Satu getting votes, there's only so many votes. You can only vote for so many people.
I'm just saying,
I think she got dinged. Because if those three at the top, it's just math after that. That's five names for three spots. Split. So you either getting the Satu praise, or Alyssa Thomas is getting her just due. I don't know if you get them both.
I feel you. And I don't think you're wrong in your read of it, to be very clear. But it's just like, if we talk about three guarantees in the front court, is Asia Stewie AT for me? If you can only pick three guarantees. And again, I recognize this is an all-star game. Like, fans want to see who they want to see. And so I do understand that portion of it. But if we were just talking about, hey, who have been the best front court players in the league this year? It's those three. It's probably Stewie, Asia, AT in that order this year.
Hey, man.
And that's where I'm just like, hey, man.
Hey, I'm not going to hold you.
I understand AT is not as popular as Stewie or BG or Asia. Like, fine. I didn't anticipate AT being like top three in front court votes. I anticipate her. She should be a starter. And her not even being close is where I'm just like, hey, man, why are we rolling this over from last year? We shouldn't be here. She's been too good. She's been too important. She's been too impactful.
Hey, man, I'm not going to hold you. BG with the 20 points on 62% shooting in the first season back.
That's cool.
You got to lock that up, buddy. You got to you just got to put that right on the top shelf.
That's cool. I get it. But like, I feel like she's been better than NECA, and NECA's been incredible this year. She's certainly been better than EDD this year. She's been better than Satu. Like, I don't disagree with any of them getting love, but like, AT's been better than them.
Wait, you said certainly, though. Hold on. Yeah. Why are you throwing EDD over the top rope like
I'm not
that?
Throwing her over again, the top rope.
2 years in a row?
I'm not throwing her over the top rope. I would just say, like, she's been tasked with doing a ton. We're going to talk about the Mystics, because, buddy, that offense, it's not EDD's fault. She's tasked with carrying a load that should be a lot easier on her than it is. But to that point, she hasn't been as efficient this year. AT has more playmaking responsibility, and she has been firmly a much better defender. Again, she's my depoy right now. So this is more about AT's been really good versus like, oh, let me just ding EDD or something like that. She's been great. Whoa, it's just levels is where I'm...
AT's going to be a... She's going to be an all-star, so no worries there. Do you have any thoughts about the guards? Because that gap between Arike, Kelsey Plum, and Chelsea Gray is tight.
Yeah. And
my question was, are we about to live in a world where the Aces really get three guards in?
Probably, honestly, if I had to guess. Which, I mean, Jackie's been incredible all year long and just had 28 with no free throws against the Storm last night. Jackie's been great. Chelsea's been really good. Kelsey Plum has been a good player this year. Like, I've appreciated the defense from her. I've really appreciated the drive. She's getting to the rim more than she ever has. She's been good. The jumper just hasn't been falling. Kelsey over Chelsea, if we're just talking about just who's been better this season so far. Like, I can't get there. I think Chelsea's been better. So it was kind of interesting to see, oh, Kelsey got the vote instead of Chelsea. That's okay. We'll see. And then Arike, again, how important she's been for Dallas's offense, the pressure that she puts on defenses. I get it. Like, when we did our first run, I had Alicia Gray in over her. And I think I would still have Alicia Gray over Arike at this point. Like, I think my changes would be, like, Alicia over Arike and then Chelsea over Kelsey right now.
I got Arike plugged in.
I got you.
So I got Jackie Young, Jewel Lloyd, Arike in, plus I had Chelsea Gray. But probably going to be insert Aces guard here.
But I think ultimately they just end up getting both of the guards in, especially as Kelsey starts to shoot better. Like, I think that's just going to be what that is. But yeah, I just wish Alyssa Thomas got more love than what she did. But to your point, like, if it does just become to the coaches handle the reserve. So I think either way, she's going to be in. So we're just quibbling over who starts versus who makes the team. Like, she's going to get in. But based on how she's played this year, she deserves to be a starter. I'm sorry. That's just kind of where I am. Some other news on the W front, just some quick hardship exception news, which that's just been filling the league this year with the injuries and people going overseas, whatever. Emily Inksler, now with the Minnesota Lynx. Crystal Dangerfield suffered a right ankle injury about 4 games ago. She's back, which means Odyssey Sims, who was signed to a hardship exception, she has been waived. Odyssey averaged about 5 points and 6 assists during her 4 games in 21 minutes. So some help on the way for the Dallas Wings. On a more general front, some teams that have impressed me as of late. I'm going to go middle / bottom of the standings. Like, I have Aces thoughts, but I always have Aces thoughts, so I'll put them to the side for now. How about the Indiana Fever? Why am I already getting the eye roll for the mere mention of an Aces thought? That's crazy. But anyway, the Indiana Fever, 4-6 on the year. They're right there for a playoff spot. Again, it's early. It's only been 10 games for them, so 30 to go for the Fever. But 4-6, they are third in offense this year, Steve. Mm-hmm. Third in offensive rating, they're 10th in defensive rating. I have thoughts on why that's the case. But anyway, third in offense, 10th in defense, 7th in net rating right now. Something that you brought up during the watch party was, even though they have 6 losses on the year, it's not like they're getting blown out. Like, their biggest loss of the season came in the second game. They lost by 17 to your New York Liberty, so 90-73 loss. And then they lost the opener, I think, by 7 or 9 points, 1 or 2. Since then, lost by 3 to the Sun, 4 to the Aces in a game, frankly, they just should have won. The Aces snatched that one in the fourth quarter, but they thoroughly outplayed Vegas in that game. An overtime loss to the Chicago Sky. That was the great James Wade call to get Alana Smith a layup, send that game into overtime. Aaliyah Boston just didn't get the ball until it was out of hand for reasons. Fine. And then a 3-point loss to the Mercury. They have been in all of these games. And if we just filter this for June, I mentioned their third in offense. They have the best offense rating in the league in June. That's a 6-game sample, 6 of their 10 games overall. 3-3 in June with the best offense in the league. And you have to start with what Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston are doing. It was a slow start in terms of shooting for Kelsey Mitchell the first 2 or 3 games of the year, but the pull-up is back. Good Lord, is the pull-up back. The snapback is also back. If you saw the shot that she hit towards the end of the game last night against the Sky. Just a filthy step. But anyway, her ability to get downhill, mix in jumpers, makes her very difficult to defend in addition to her off-ball work. And then Aaliyah Boston. She is happy to not see 2-3 defenders in her lap every time she touches the ball like she was at South Carolina. Her footwork, her level of poise on the block is well beyond her years. And we talked about this, you know, after I think it was like the opening weekend pod. Like, you start the season against Bree Jones and have to deal with that physicality. And it felt like the first quarter, Bree just able to move her and Aaliyah trying to post her up. That was a bit tough. It felt like after, like, second quarter onward, or really the second half onward, it was like, oh, okay, so this is what she does. This is how she likes to defend. This is how she likes to score. I'm good. The level of comfort that she's displayed so far is wild to me. She sprinkled in some jumpers. The passing is popping more and more as they give her more of these high post touches. I mostly like the defense. Like, foul trouble still a bit of an issue. But I like the defense from Aaliyah. Like, she has been not just the best rookie. Like, she's winning rookie of the year, barring, like, an injury or something. There's a reason that she's in the all-star discussion. Like, one, she does have the fan base. But her play, especially as of late, has warranted. Like, nah, she should just be an all-star. Now, all-star starter still feels a little rich for me, just to be transparent. Especially if it's Aaliyah versus Alyssa Thomas. Like, I'm just going to Alyssa Thomas there. But Aaliyah has earned all-star consideration, just point blank, period, with how well she's played. And that is just a testament to how good she is and the context change for her and her taking advantage of that. That's been fun. And just watching the Fever figure some stuff out on offense, man. Like, they empty aside, you good luck. It is Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston. It is Kelsey Mitchell and Alyssa Smith, who the three-point shooting's kind of fallen off since the beginning of the year, but still someone that can pop, someone that can flow on the pull-up, someone that can just put her head down and bully you, someone who can get it off the offensive glass as well. I've enjoyed the Alyssa Smith experience on offense this year, so that's been fun. Christy Wallace, after being traded from the Dream to the Fever this offseason, I think she's given them some really solid minutes as well. The defense has been very important, which leads me to, if there's something that frustrates me about this Fever team, aside from Christy Wallace defensively, like, it's just not great in the guard group. Like, it hasn't been a fun screen navigation year for Kelsey Mitchell. It hasn't been that for Erica Wheeler. And I think because of what the point of attack has been for the Fever this year, it's putting a lot of strain on the front court. It's putting a lot of strain on Aaliyah. It's putting a lot of strain on Alyssa Smith, who isn't the best defender right now, to be kind. And so when she's also putting action with one of these guards, it's just a lot on the back end. And doubly hurts because the Fever have been trying to mix in some aggression defensively. And so when that back line isn't tied together, it's just kind of tough. And even when Aaliyah's in a drop, like, there's just so much dribble penetration being allowed. It just gets kind of tough. And that's where you get into some of the foul trouble with Aaliyah, which mutes the impact some. But overall, this has been a fun Fever team to watch. They have been in close game after close game after close game. The young players are bringing it. I'm having fun watching the Fever.
Nah, the Fever are more than on the right track. I think some of the concerns you have, they're a young team. So they're going to have to figure out how to defend, how to execute in certain moments. But I like the fact that they're able to get their three best players, quote unquote, going without having to force the issue a ton. Mm-hmm. Like, Aaliyah Boston is a force. You can use pick and roll, let her seal and work and finish, and that's a pressure point. Kelsey Mitchell, we know what she can do on ball, in pick and roll, on handoff. She can finish a play as well. Alyssa Smith, very versatile. I feel like that's slept on. The ability to shoot, the ability to drive, the ability to push and transition at times. Those three being able to be comfortable is huge. But I also like, the biggest sign for me with the Fever is their role players come in and do their job. Like, Erica Wheeler is, I'm here to do one thing and one thing only. Be quick and set things up. Christy Wallace, she's been aggressive offensively, by the way. But hey, I am here to defend. Lexi Hull, I am here to defend.
Grace Berger, Vivian's
comes and scores. Grace Berger, what do y'all need me to run? What are we running? Three dribbles, pass, I'm cool. I'm going, it's a post-up play? All right, dribble, pass, I'm cutting. What? Grace Berger's ability to organize that offense and literally just, hey, I'm out the way. Go ahead. That's been the most fun. But it's hard to disrespect the Fever. I'll put it that way.
No more medicine and sickness jokes, huh?
Well, you got to give the gift to modern medicine, man.
Okay.
Everybody gets better.
All right. We were doing so well. That's tough. I also just want to give a quick hat tip to the Seattle Storm. 2-7 this year. Hasn't been great. 12th in offense, 9th in defense. I will say in June, they have the third best defense in the W. That was first until the Aces hung 96 on them in a game in which, hey, they can shoot threes again. That's neat. We didn't see much of that during the road trip. So Aces got a dub. That knocked them from first to third. But Seattle is defending their tails off, Steve. They are defending their tails off. Ezzie McGregor is erasing just about everything at the rim. She's also been fun on switches. Jordan Horston, as a rookie, has been asked to defend a little bit of everyone. And that's been fun. She's been switchable. Also, watching the Mercury game, her being the primary, hey, we're doubling Brittany, cool. I'll mix up the timing here. I'll mix in some aggression. I'll get some deflections. I'm just really enjoying watching Jordan Horston play. The jumper has to fall, for sure, because the efficiency numbers are not great. But you can just see the screening, the short roll decisions, the defense, the activity on the glass on both ends. She's been fun. I really enjoyed Jordan Horston. But overall, like, the defense has just been, I've enjoyed watching Seattle try to defend.
Here's what I'll give Seattle credit for.
Okay.
Their effort has been locked in every single time I've watched them this season. They have been as committed of a defensive team as I think I've seen in the W. As far as this is what we're doing, and you have to deal with it. Like, my mind goes back to the Liberty game where they're like, hey, we're just switching. We're going to switch the entire night. Can you figure it out? They play the Aces. Hey, we're going to bring activity. Like, you have to beat us. Now, mm-hmm. The problem is, Aces kind of figured it out eventually.
Yeah, and then it just got kind of tough, you know.
That 31 points with 4 minutes in the second quarter turned into something a whole lot different by the end of the night. But that's not a discredit to the Storm. They're active. They play as a team. They play hard. They play together. Unfortunately, the talent gap just hits them more nights than not. But it's not due to effort. And Jewel Lloyd having this type of season, Ezzie on both ends of the floor being able to contribute. Like, the offensive run from Ezzie Mamagore has been fun.
Steve, they letting her run pick and roll now.
Yeah.
It's like, not just the grab and go after defensive rebounds. They are letting her run some ball screens. It's like, hey, man, this is what this kind of season is supposed to be about. You're our best young player. Let's let you spread your wings. Let's see what you can do. And let's let you do it. Continue. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I think being able to have this runway for Jordan Horston is important. I think Keaton Norris has been solid. But I like the totality of what the Storm are attempting to do. The record may not be what it needs to be to reflect the success or the effort they're putting in, but they are working.
They are working indeed. Also, just a quick shout out to Ivana Dojkic, who has been shooting the absolute leather off the ball. Also making some nice reads and pick and roll, getting downhill. She's fighting defensively as well. Like, just the point guard room in general for Seattle has been interesting to watch. Again, like, the offense has not been good overall. Like, there's a cap on the personnel beyond Jewel Lloyd offensively, but you can at least see the blueprint of what they're trying to get to. So watching the Ivana minutes, like, Jay Melbourne checks in, she does fun stuff. So, like, I like what the Storm are trying to build. The wins probably won't come this year, but it's been a fun group. Steve, who's popped for you as of late?
The Atlanta Dream. The Atlanta Dream, an impressive week. I was concerned about the Atlanta Dream. At 2-5, you lose 3 straight at home. Feels like you're falling backwards. About to go on the road. I'm not sure if this is it. Now, the 3 home losses did come against the Aces, Liberty, and Sun, which I think consensus you'd probably say in some order are the top 3 teams in the league. Injuries have not been Atlanta's friend either. But hey, you go to New York and you beat the Liberty. You go to Connecticut and you beat the Sun. You have my attention.
There you go.
And with the Dream, I'm caught in between, but they're young. They're starting to move in the right direction. I think it's the fact that they could get better that intrigues me the most.
Yeah.
Like, they're competing right now in this moment with some food left on the plate. I guess I could put it that way. But I've liked enough of what I've seen to be like, hey, I think there's more wiggle room for them. Like, I think the defensive activity is perking up. Do I think it's their calling card? No. But you are seeing more effort to be more active. You're seeing more physicality. Offensively, I go back and forth with it. And the reason why I go back and forth with it is because they've changed, but how much of that change is going to help them going forward? Like, this is a team last year, amazing tempo and pace. It always jumped off the screen to me until the league figured out, oh, that's what y'all do.
Switch.
Handle these switches, and now y'all in the mud. So now you see a little bit of a slower tempo, a little bit more of a focus to grind it in the half court, and that's where Alicia Gray has been so great with her drives and her movement and the ways that you can use her. Ryan Howard hasn't shot the ball as well as she could, but she's still a pressure point. She's still going to be aggressive. Cheyenne Parker has been very tough to deal with in the post all season long. I think those three have established what they can do, mm-hmm. and that helps Atlanta in the half court. At the same time, I still have concerns about the half court just because now it feels like they, I don't want to say they overcorrected, but they may have just flipped a couple settings or sliders the other way a little bit too much. Like the tempo feels a little off at times. Like it just feels slow. Like, do we need to take 12 seconds to set up this one singular pick and roll? Do we need 14 seconds to set up this one singular post up? Mm-hmm. But that's where I'm like, hey, I think there's more here. But if you've gotten better at fighting through some of these grinded out possessions, that probably helps you throughout the length of the season, throughout, you know, a playoff series if you make it. So that's where I'm like, hey, are these question marks going to bring them down, or are they going to find a way to answer these? And is that going to pay off down the line? Because offensively, in theory, you got pick and roll, you got off ball screens, you got post ups, you got handoffs, you got personnel. I mean, you won these two games on the road against New York and Connecticut without shooting great from three. So it's not like there's one thing you have to do to win a game. It's just, what's the best version of you, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, I've just really enjoyed Alicia Gray's season, period. It's just been fun to watch her get to, no pun intended, spread her wings in Atlanta. And I think the drives have been massively important, especially in light of some of the flow questions that I've had with Atlanta offensively. And we'll get into those a little bit later in one of the mailbag questions specifically. But I think trying to figure out what their identity is overall is going to be the big question. Because you said the defense was their hallmark last year. Because offensively, I agree with you. Like, the tempo was good. Like, they ran good stuff. It was very much, they don't have enough shooters for this yet. Or they don't have enough people that can get downhill to really make this work. But I see what Tanisha Wright's trying to do here. And so now you get the influx in talent. Cool. But then you lose some of that talent, or you just lose your point guard room due to injury. And so now as well, Haley, now you step in, which, enjoying her minutes as well. Haley Jones doing the thing. Couple of starts under the belt. We like it.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I got to give a quick salute to Haley Jones. Just the way that she's been able to provide different things for this Atlanta team. Oh, you need point guard play? I got you. I'll organize it. I'll knock some shots down. I'll play some defense. But the all-around nature is intriguing me. Continue.
No, you're good. Filling gaps there. But, like, as they try to sort through, one, who their rotation is, just in light of the injuries and stuff, and just a general, let's implement these new players in, I think that's where I don't know what their identity is yet. Because the offense is better, but it's not as much better as you would think based on the personnel improvements. And again, some of that is just injury and some of that's just shooting. We'll see if that perks up. But, like, the offense is better than it was last year, but the offensive rating still isn't great. The defense has slid from last year. So it's like, it's weird to add Alicia Gray and then your defense gets worse, because we know what Alicia Gray can do defensively. I don't anticipate that holding, but I'm just waiting on them for me to have the, okay, this is what the Dream do. Now, they're either going to do it or they're not, but this is what they do. And I feel like they're still kind of in that process for me. But this was a very encouraging two-game stretch for them. Their first win against the Connecticut Sun since 2019, I think, is what I heard on the broadcast last night. That's big. And to do that on the road is big. You mentioned the post-ups for Cheyenne Parker. Like, I think only four players in the W have scored more points via post-up than Cheyenne so far this year. But her bucket over, I think, three defenders sent that game into overtime last night. So that was fun. And then the Dream snatched that one in overtime. So it's nice to see the positive trends. Like, again, we're a month into the season. So, like, a lot can change, but nice to see them taking some positive steps. Who are the teams making you think right now, Steve?
I got a couple. Okay. I guess I should get my stuff out of the way, because I know you got the hashtag rant downloading on the Wi-Fi right now. Mm-hmm. The Connecticut Sun. Very weird to say that about, what, the second best team in the W?
I'm curious what your thoughts are here.
Three losses that I respect and have praised and did so in the preseason. Here's where I'm at, right? Okay. The Sun are very good. My mind is trying to figure out, okay, how good are they? And what does this look like in a playoff setting? And what's their flaw? Like, for you, if you're trying to figure out, hey, what's the Dream's thing? I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's the one thing that Connecticut just can't overcome? And I don't know which one it is right now. Because if you look at their three losses, right? I know you're going to go, and I know the offense is the concern, pace, tempo. I understand. There are three losses. You go to New York, DeWanna Bonner shoots 4 for 13. Alyssa Thomas is 0 for 5. Got it. Chalk that up. We good. You play the Aces, and the loss you had, DeWanna Bonner 2 for 9, Alyssa Thomas 4 for 11, Bree Jones 6 for 13. Okay. I understand. You lose to the Dream, where DaWanna Bonner, Alyssa Thomas, and Bree Jones combined for 71 points, all of them over 20. And you have Hayes, Heideman, Nelson Adota, Allen, and Harris combined to go 2 for 19. So is it Uchiwali or is it one Mike? Because I don't know. Like, how is it? Is it we just need to take one of these big players off the board? Hey, we just need to make their guards make plays and make shots. Hey, what happens when they can't defend at that same level and they can't turn defense into offense? Which one is it? That's the only thought I have with the Sun. Because when we get into a playoff series, my mind is like, hey, you don't want to play Connecticut. But at the same time, it's like, hey, if we could just get them here, we got a shot. And I'm lost there. Am I off or?
No, I don't think you're off. And I think your questions are valid. My immediate thought is you saying, what is the Suns' one thing? My mind immediately went to guard play. It's guard play for me. It is absolutely guard play. And I think you see it on the nights when Tiffany Mitchell has it as both a driver and someone that can knock down shots. They look entire. They look very different. Because ultimately, you're always going to have the post-ups from Bree. You're always going to have just the general activity and direction from Alyssa Thomas in the half court. Her push shots will go or they won't. And even if they don't go, she'll get her own board. So fine. The front court, whatever. And we know DaWanna Bonner is going to get the shots up. And if they fall, she can drop 41 like she did against the Aces. And if they don't, you still have to guard her because she can shoot and she's ignitable. Fine. I don't know what I'm getting from the guard room every night. And that's my biggest issue. I've liked a lot of what Tiffany Hayes has brought. Haven't super loved the defense all year. She's had some spurts, but I haven't loved the defense. But Tiffany Hayes, the drives are important. And if she's making shots, she becomes very difficult to deal with. It's, again, I'll throw out the obvious caveat. It's very early in the season. It's felt like Natisha Heideman has regressed on both ends so far to start this year. And they can't afford to have that. They can't have that in addition to, we have Ty Harris, but we're not really going to play Ty Harris. Okay, here's the night we're going to play Ty Harris. Oh, wait, Ty Harris isn't hitting shots. It feels like they have one reliable guard right now. And even with what Rebecca Allen is bringing this year, she shot well from three. The volume hasn't really been there because her minutes fluctuate based on who they're trying to play her alongside. And so that's where I'm like, if they don't get a consistent level of guard play, they are going to make the second round and they are going to make a very tough series because their defense is going to be insane. And Alyssa Thomas is really good. They're going to have like a paint advantage and a rebound advantage. And then they're just not going to be able to score enough. And that's where I'm like, I need something. It doesn't have to be a trade or anything drastic, but they have to get more from their guards for me to really feel like, because for me right now, it's Ace in a tier, maybe the Sun in their own tier, and then everyone else. Mm. In order for this to become the Aces and the Sun are in the same tier, the Sun's guards have to be better. Mm. That's just where I'm at with it.
Very surprising for you to put the Aces in their own tier.
Have you seen their net rating this year? But anyway, no, in all seriousness, that's where my question goes with the Connecticut Sun. Did you have any other teams that you...
Just go ahead and talk about the Mystics, buddy.
Yeah, so Washington. Their defense is very, 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 very good. How much does this matter if their offensive ceiling does not rise? It has been very fun watching Shakira Austin improve offensively and get more reps with the ball in her hands, get to make more decisions, more post-ups, more drives. That has been dope. It has been cool that over the last few games, Natasha Cloud is shooting over 40% from three. Have defenses shifted at all against the Washington Mystics from this year compared to last year? I do not think they have been defended any differently than they have been last year. And that is a problem for me as I project this as a team that can contend. I don't have questions about the defense. And ultimately, if they're able to turn enough of their stops into transition opportunities, that gives them a little bit of a lifeboat. Cool. When they are in the half court, I don't like it 85% of the time. I just don't. It's just a mix of switches and unders. And hey, here's EDD on the left block. She's dangerous. Wait, here are three defenders in her lap. And that's where I left their offseason saying, I like that you added talent. I like that you mostly kept the bench intact. Have you solved your spacing issue offensively? And the answer right now, it is early, but the answer is a resounding no right now. This is a team that is 11th in offensive rating. That's not going to cut it. And like, it hasn't changed structurally for me. And so that's what makes, oh, Ariel Atkins shooting well from three now, but start the season, she didn't knock down shots. It felt even worse. Because like, you were the one pillar in that starting lineup from a spacing perspective that they needed. And if those shots aren't falling, it really gets tight for you. EDD, as great as she's been, she's missed a game with the neck. Like, the shooting has kind of tailed off for her over the last few games. And if she isn't saving possessions, knocking down contested shots, the offense feels even worse. There is so much pressure and responsibility on Elena Delladon because of the spacing restrictions that she's dealing with. And while I have enjoyed the drives from Brittany Sykes, and I have enjoyed the defense from her, and I love what she's been able to do in transition as well, in the half court, she's getting gapped. Much like Natasha Cloud, as well as she's shooting from three, teams are still helping off. So Torrey Walker-Kimbrough, who was fine as a shooter last year, teams are helping off. Where is the shift? And that's what's kind of, I don't want it to put a damper on what Shakira Austin has done on offense this year, because I think her growth is very important. But we've talked about this in a couple of watch parties at this point. It's felt like she's been their second best player this season. And that's kind of a problem in light of everything else. You want her to be what takes them over the top. But if she's making these improvements and she's getting these buckets, but they're in a vacuum because defenses still haven't shifted overall of what they're doing against her, what they're doing against EDD, or how they're treating anybody else on the perimeter. Within a playoff lens, what does that mean? And so that's kind of where I'm like, what can the Mystics do? Is there a move to be made? Is this just a matter of, okay, Ariel Atkins is shooting, I think, 37.5% for three over her last six. If she's just back, how much of that does it solve? But they just have the same structural issue with me offensively.
I'm trying to assume a little bit of bail.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned the spacing. Overall, as a team, they're shooting 38% from the field. Yeah. Just in general. So it's not even just the threes. They're 11th, shooting 30% from three, which is not great. But they're just not shooting well, period. And how much of this is just the guards play better? I don't think they had it on the bingo card. Oh, Natasha Cloud and Ariel Atkins and Brittany Sykes all struggle at the same time. Like, Natasha Cloud shooting 35% from the field. Overall. Assists are down a little bit. Ariel Atkins shooting 31% from the field, 28% from three. That was 42 and 36 last year. Brittany Sykes shooting 28% from the field. If they play better, is that enough of a tweak for the Mystics to where, oh, we at least have something else?
I just don't know.
They just need to shift to where Shakira Austin's offense can be a bonus and not, oh, you need to be very good for us to make this work. Because the defense is there. And if you're in a position where the transition improves or the guards play well, I think things look different. I think they give me Heat vibes as far as we understand what our issue is. We are working to try and improve on that. While working on trying to improve that, we are trying to win games. Hopefully we win enough to make it pay off. That's my read on it so far. You're not wrong, but I think that's where I'm at.
I got you. Like, and again, like you, as you list out the field goal percentage numbers, like they're not going to do that the entire season. And so they're going to be better. But my thing is, like, if it normalizes for Ariel Atkins, from not just from three, but just overall from the field, if it normalizes for her, if it normalizes for Natasha Cloud, if it normalizes for Brittany Sykes, if they're sixth in offensive rating instead of 11th, they're better. But that's still an average offense with half-court questions. And then when it becomes a playoff series where, okay, we can just do very specific things against your personnel now. Like, if it's a set, like, if we get a second round series between the Aces and the Mystics, like depending on the line of construction, like what stops me from putting like Candace on Natasha Cloud? and turning all the EDD pick and rolls into switches. And then Candace just stays near the rim. Like, in theory, like, what stops me from doing that right now?
Bases defense.
Which has been very good. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, you, those are the kind of gambits.
Wait a minute. You can't go on an empty corner pick and roll rant and then say they've been very good. You cannot do both. You need to pick one lane right now. Sir.
I can.
No.
It hasn't been ideal with empty corner pick and roll. But again, if you are just turning that into a switch, what does that mean? The issue with the empty corner pick and roll is that they've been getting two on the ball and the back line hasn't been peeled in on time. As has been discussed on the dunker spot. But yeah, like, I. Again, like, you can just do, even if it ain't the aces, what stops a team from putting a big on one of their guards is my general question. And saying, we are keeping you near the rim, not down enough shots for us to care. We are keeping this big near the rim, so anytime you try to post up EDD, even if you get a mismatch, there's going to be two. And she has to pass the ball elsewhere. Like, within that gambit, it's important that Shakira Austin's made this growth offensively so you can counter some stuff. But I'm just saying, I haven't seen enough from them to shift things. And even if it gets better, are they going to stop going under against Natasha Cloud? Are they going to stop going under against Brittany Sykes? Are they going to feel less comfortable going under against Ariel Atkins? And if so, how much so? I want to see something different. I don't want to just have this in my crawl in like June. And then once we get to September, like, well, still feel the same way. Like, I would like to be proven wrong. Because if they hit their level, they can, like, this is a Mystics team that can win the title based on the personnel they have. That defense is that good. EDD is that good. They can do it, but I just got questions. I just have questions. We can get to some quick player shout outs while we are here. Let me go to the Minnesota Lynx really quickly. Nafisa Collier has been really freaking good. She's not going to be, I don't think she's going to be an all-star starter. I think she ends up making the all-star team. But just very quietly having the best offensive season of her career and like having Cheryl Reed just open the playbook for her. Career high in points right now. 50% on twos, 36% on threes, 88% from the line. Also getting to the line at a career high rate right now. She is leading the W in scoring in June. Shade under 25 points per game, shooting 40% from three. The downhill juice has been palpable. I've also enjoyed her having more pick and roll reps as well. Like, I talked a little bit about like Ezzy getting some pick and rolls, but like that's very much a random possession here or there, or like an early draft screen or something. Nah, they are just having Kayla McBride screen for Nafisa Collier. Like, go have some fun. Or insert guard here. Go have some fun. She's already had 37 pick and roll reps this year through 9 games. Ranks in the 95th percentile in terms of efficiency. 1.14 points per possession on those trips. She had 50 total in her last healthy season. So 2021, that was 50 in 29 games. She's at 37 and 9 this year. So still isn't a super high volume. It's like 4 game. But I love that they're letting her do more. Like, part of this is that she just has to do more in light of what the guard play has been in Minnesota this year. And again, you zoom out, Minnesota hasn't been a great team this year. But I have had a lot of fun watching Nafisa Collier kind of spread her wings because she can still do the post-up stuff. If someone else like a Tiffany Mitchell draws attention, like, she can still cut into open space. Defensively, I feel like she's been solid. So just a very under the radar all-star / all W caliber season for Nafisa Collier. On the Aces front, odd time to do it now. I wanted to do this on the Monday pod, but naturally, Kia Stokes only played, I think, 8 minutes last night. But I've just really enjoyed her defensive season this year for the Aces. The general rim protection, they've asked her to head. She's done a good job at that. They've asked her to trap. She's done a good job at that. They've asked her to switch more than they did last year, and she's held up, which has been interesting. And, like, just talking to Becky Hammond and talking to Asia Wood, like, they have been raving about Kia's defense all year long. So just want to give her a shout. The Aces with basically a plus 11 net rating with Kia Stokes on the floor this year. So just want to give her a shout. And then for Phoenix, just a couple of shouts. Their season hasn't been great this year, but Shug Sutton averaging 12-5 this year. Her drives have been very important. Just the bucket getting in general has been important. And Michaela Anyanwede, very quietly, the volume isn't the highest, 2.8 attempts, but shooting 50% from three, 43% on corner threes, I think that is very important development for her. We'll see how real it is. I don't think the 50% number is real. But if she does become a reliable player from the corners, that can unlock some of the drives, and I think she's on the floor for the defense anyway. So, like, an outline forming of, like, the 3-and-D plus a little bit of driving chops blueprint there. So I wanted to give her the shout in light of what Phoenix's season has been so far. That is what I had. Did you have any players you want to shout out?
Jackie Young.
Makes sense.
60% from the field, 47% from three. That's historic. Love to see if that happens. I can ask you an MVP question. De'Aaron Cambi coming right along.
Boy, is she.
2 steals, 10 of 15 from the field against Dallas. Starting to see the aggression. 10 or more field goal attempts in the last 3 games. So you love to see that. Marina Mabry. First player in Sky history, 11th in W history to have 35 or more points with six or more made threes and shooting 60% from three.
Yee. Well, she gets cooking. She can cook.
She can cook. That's all I have.
Okay. Well, props to them.
Did you have free throws?
I do, but I'll probably just roll those over in light of time. Do you have free throws?
Do I? That man didn't. He ain't got no free throws again.
You're not gonna like, huh? Brother, we are an hour 15 in. I just wanted to. We had free throws and a mailbag. I was like,
ain't no way.
Well,
ain't no way.
Well,
who do you relate more to, Giannis or Jokic?
Oh, geez. Probably Giannis, just for the jokes, if nothing else.
Ah, I see. So does that one Nuggets fan just always have to wear the yellow polo and Nuggets jeans from now on? Is that the bit?
It's going to be a bit disorienting. Like, hey, what you doing in basketball shorts? What is this?
More accurate, the Washington Midstits or the Phoenix Plutos?
Oh, God. These feel like Rod jokes. That's crazy.
Shout out Jeremy.
That also tracks. That also tracks. Oh man, not the Phoenix Plutos. That's crazy. No longer a planet. That's great. Shoot. I guess the mid sticks.
It's more of a visual one than an audio one.
Yeah.
I gotta get the timing down.
So that's fine.
It's fine. Is Carl Anthony Towns a game changer?
Teams do different things when he's on the court, so yes.
Okay.
I'm not piling on Cat, dog. There's been enough. I can't care that much. Like, complimentary. I can't care that much.
If James Harden leaves the Sixers, who's the most who's the player you want to see go to Philly?
This sounds like agenda adjacent. If James ain't there, I don't even know, man. Cause like I get the Fred Nick Nurse connection, but like that's a really small backcourt. I don't really think they should trade for Bradley Beal. I could see it, but that's also not the most ideal defensive backcourt in light of what the rest of the personnel is. I don't even know. That's a bad answer, but I don't know.
Man said, I don't know.
I guess Beal would be cool.
Okay. What did Shaq do to you?
He's done nothing to me. What you mean?
I don't know, man. Keeping an eye on it, buddy.
Nah, he's done nothing to me. All I will say is that we see you. There is film of what you are doing.
So you going shopping for tools this weekend?
Thank you for listening to this episode of the. Oh, duh. That's, yeah. We all keeping an eye on it. Not fooling us. Was that the last free throw you had?
Yeah.
Okay, well, in that case, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. We will roll over the mailbag questions, I think. I guess we do have to do a draft episode, huh? We'll figure it out. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our Dunker Spot online watch parties. We're watching W basketball. We are watching wrestling, which I wonder what Jey Uso is going to do tonight. I think Roman's back. That's going to be interesting. But anyway, we're watching all sorts of things. The link to the parties are going to be in your description. If it's hyperlinked, just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Again, it is free, no shenanigans at all. Come have some fun with us. Live analysis, lots of laughs, lots of antics in the chat. You know, keep your phone within your eye view. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Bye.